Today is October 3rd, 2013, and this is episode number 224 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, butcher, baker, and candlestick maker. At least that's what I said after they found me rolling in flour and dripping. I'm going to stop. That's just no good. So, to get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, so folks, you have no idea what we have been going through to get this show even started. You can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you would like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at acm@macobserver.com. You have no idea. You have no idea the gyrations and tribulations and trials through which we have gone to be here today.
An odyssey.
And it's the first time we've been late since we rebooted.
That's true. And I so have the image in my head that you started to paint for us of you.
Yeah, I had this whole thing. You found me dripping in blood and rolled in flour and covered in wax and whatever.
And all I can think is, my God, it's like Cirque du Mac all over again.
Exactly. So yesterday, you're trying to record in another part of the state.
Right.
And you've got one earphone from your Mac in one ear and an earphone in your Mac from your iPad, and you're listening to me through your Mac and you're trying to record on your iPad and then your Mac was mess. It's just
yes, and while people are thinking, why in the world would you do such a thing? Trust us, it was actually the last ditch effort to try and get everything to happen. And
yes, and then we start trying to record today and my electricity goes off,
which is crazy. You would expect mine to go off because I'm living in essentially a second world country
area
right now. I'm in a disaster zone, and my internet goes out, my power goes out. I could go on, but
truly,
there's more that you really don't want to hear. And yeah, so you would expect it from my end.
Yeah.
But not from your end. I mean, you live in a first world state.
I know. Well, and these are all first world problems, that's for sure. That's for sure. I mean, you know, I also baked cookies today. So, you know, I mean, you know, I guess how tough is my life really?
Yeah, there is that. Well, there's kind of sad cookies because I can't eat them. And not because I'm physically in a different state, but because you did not make Jeff safe cookies.
Yeah, I did not. If it helps, though, they came off a little more like sugar cookies than shortbread, and they really need to be shortbread. So, you know, again, first world problems. So we have a show, though, and this show is brought to us today by Sanebox.
Yes.
Which is not me suddenly developing some kind of...
Yeah, it's really Sanebox.
Sanebox, yeah. Yeah, really cool company doing a really cool thing. We're going to get to them later, of course. Let us start. What are we even talking about today?
I think we're off to a good start because we've discussed the issues that you have partying. And,
yes.
And we've discussed the issues, the technological issues that I had to deal with so that we could actually make the show happen. And we've mentioned our sponsor, Sanebox. Okay, and that's this week's Apple Context Machine. Thanks for listening.
No.
Oh, that's right. We had other topics.
We have other topics we have to talk about.
Do you want to talk about how you feel about Samsung?
Oh, sure. Why not? I am already tense and cranky, so why not? Let's just...
Yeah, this might be a venting thing. This is going to be healthy. This is good for you. Let it out, Brian.
Therapeutic. So we've had a couple of different pieces of news regarding Samsung this week. The first is that Samsung and HG Wells, and LG and HTC and Asus have all been caught gaming the benchmarking system by including code on their devices that automatically makes the processor on those devices run faster than they normally do when they detect a benchmarking app being run. It's just cheating.
Gaming the system.
They're gaming the system, and it's just okay. Beyond it being morally repugnant to me, I'm a firm believer that if you have to cheat, why bother? The victory has no value or meaning whatsoever. But above and beyond that, the only people that care about benchmarks in 2013 are gearheads and geeks and nerds. A small percentage of even the people that follow technology. Because, you know, these devices, all the Android devices, the HTC One, the Galaxy S4, the iPhone 5C and 5S and 5 and 4S, and, the Galaxy Note 3 and the Asus Padfone, whatever that thing is, stupid name. But all these devices are plenty fast to do what it is that they need to do. No one cares. No one cares if one device is 10% faster than the other or 5% faster than the other. And
certainly not the target market for these products.
Most of the target market, yeah.
Okay, yeah, that's fair. Most of the target market.
So the only people that care happen to be the same people that are going to catch you when you cheat.
So
it's
inevitable
that they got caught. And the reason why they got caught is because a Galaxy or a Samsung device with a certain processor, one of the Snapdragon processors, was scoring much better than every other device with the same processor in it. So guess what the gearheads did? They went, huh. Hell, why is that? Let's find out why. Because that's the people that care about these sorts of things. That's what they're going to do. It is inevitable that all these companies got caught, and I do not understand why they would bother. It's crazy.
And yet
they
did it.
Actually, they did it. It is an irrational act. The people that made this decision were not thinking or behaving or acting rationally and intellectually and morally bankrupt at the same time.
Okay, so if you're dealing with the problems that go along, or with the side effects that go along with not really caring about whether or not you're doing the right thing, it becomes much easier to go ahead and lie like they have without worrying about the repercussions.
Apparently, yeah.
And my guess is that,
by definition,
is that
right.
They are absolutely stunned, like truly surprised that they're being called out for falsifying or misrepresenting the stats that they're collecting off their products.
Yeah, there's no doubt that the folks responsible have rationalizations. You know, be it from, we're just trying to show what the processor really does, or, well, everyone else is doing it too. Which everyone else is not doing it, first of all. Google, none of the Nexus devices, even the devices made by some of these offending companies, the Nexus devices don't do this. Motorola's devices don't do this. And guess what? Apple's devices don't do this. So not everyone does it, but I'm sure that that's part of the rationale for some of them. I mean, it's just absolutely crazy, and it just shows that the morally bankrupt.
You know, and this I see as a big problem, well, on many levels. But what these companies will have to deal with now is that the people that know to look are going to look at everything they do.
Oh, yeah. The people they were trying to impress now know that they can't be trusted and are absolutely – you're just absolutely right. They're going to be poring over every little thing.
Right. So if they have even the smallest transgression in the information they present, even if it's totally –
Do you hear the sirens?
The sirens? Are they coming for you?
No, I'm hoping that the morality police going after the Samsung executives. And
oh, see, I mix that up all the time. I hear the sirens and I just run.
It's so funny, you being a former cop.
So anyhow, even if the morality police don't catch up with them, there's still the whole thing with, even if they make a simple, honest mistake in representing a data point about specs of any kind, the people that are already watching are going to rake them over the coals.
Yes, and I apologize for the ongoing sirens because they seem to have found.
Well, apparently there's a lot of morality issues.
Yeah, apparently. So there's that. There's that little thing, and you know, quite frankly, I think it should be getting more attention than it is. But I should point out, the folks over at Anantech and Ars Technica were the ones that first started digging into this stuff. And they've both done some great work. I've got links in the article, the editorial I wrote on the subject. I've got links to them, so you know, you can check them out there. But you know, like tables and you know, just a lot of math and just they did a lot of really good work, and they deserve huge pats on the back.
Yes, they do.
So, and then today, actually, very late last night our time, but. Today, in European time, Florian Mueller wrote a piece about Samsung's outside attorneys having given Samsung executives and internal attorneys access to terms of a Nokia and Apple licensing agreement that they were ordered not to disclose.
Right. So court order.
A court order. So in other words, the outside attorney was given access to terms of the deal so that the outside attorney could, you know, as part of the discovery process in the Samsung versus Apple, one of the Samsung versus Apple cases. And, but for competitive reasons, Apple did not want, Apple, I think, and Nokia, but Apple in particular didn't want Samsung or anyone else to know what those licensing terms are. Now, this is fairly standard practice, especially for Apple. You know, they don't want anything known. But the, you know, the reality is that when you're negotiating with one company, you don't want to know what or you don't want you don't want other companies to know what you've already agreed to pay someone else. It's, if you can keep that secret, you do. And the courts agreed that Samsung Incorporated, you know, the executives of Samsung, didn't need access to that data, and they were prohibited from getting it. And they, guess what?
Oh, I, you know, I'm going to let you say, just because I have a feeling it's going to be cathartic for you. Go ahead.
They got it.
Yeah.
They got it. The outside attorney sent it to, included the agreement, terms of the agreement, in a document that was posted to Samsung's internal FTP server, and none of the secret information was redacted. In addition, it was emailed to executives at Samsung four different times by that attorney's office.
Okay, so what that means is that this was not an accident. They knew that they were handing over this information that they were not supposed to give.
Well, either that or one of the preeminent patent attorneys in the U.S., Quinn Emanuel, goofed five times.
Yeah. So is that like
we don't know. We don't motive. We shouldn't assert motive. We shouldn't even assert that they did anything deliberate because we don't actually know. My absolute opinion is that it was done on purpose because they didn't care, but we don't know.
So I have to ask, did you toss that part in just because you know we're bagging on attorneys?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. And that's okay. The defense that's in my head for this, it's like, the guy that's being charged with murder for stabbing someone to death. And he goes, no, no, I didn't stab him. He kept running into my knife.
Repeatedly, yeah. Yeah. And then it was sent to 50 different executives at least 4 times. That was how it went. And of course, everybody and their brother inside Samsung had access to this FTP server. I mean, the whole thing is just... It just shows, you know, we have this on the heels of this 8 before 10 nonsense. Did we talk about that last week? Did that happen after the show? Oh, Dave was doing your show last week.
Yes, Dave had to step in for me last week, which was totally awesome of him. Thank you for stepping in when I was stuck in a situation where I could not record.
Yes, indeed. Thank you, Dave. So there was last week we had this. We had Samsung putting up a website. I'm sorry, an editorial, a quote unquote editorial, where they said, you know, look at all these gold phones that we've been doing, you know, going back to feature phone days, and they were trying to propagate the hashtag 8 before 10 because they released the gold Samsung Galaxy S4. In the United Arab Emirates on September 10th, which came 2 days before Apple officially announced. And it's just like they're just desperate for recognition, and they're clearly willing to do anything it takes to win. You know, they have been convicted of copying Apple, of deliberately copying Apple, willfully copying Apple's designs and intellectual property in order to get their early Samsung devices off the ground. I mean, this company.
It's really, I find it really surprising that there are so many things that are happening related to Samsung that make me step back and think, how is it possible that they could be okay doing these things? Now, if it's one thing where, but okay, let's say that there was one feature in the Samsung phones that perfectly matched a feature on the iPhone. It was just one. I could see where they could say, look, you know, we were developing this at the same time. We had no idea. And clearly great minds think alike. And we ended up with the same feature.
Which you can I personally assume you can say about the gold Galaxy.
Sure. Okay. S4. Yeah.
And obviously they were working on them at the same time. And who cares?
But the thing is, there are so many of these things. When you get so much, you have to start looking at the totality of the circumstances. And in this case, it's adding up to say that Samsung, their leadership, has no moral concern at all about copying. Mm-mm. And then about misleading. Mm-hmm. And then about flat out lying about what they've done.
Yeah, and this back to this this court business for that came out today. According to the court documents that were released, Samsung has been not complying with discovery orders regarding this. The judge wants to know basically how this happened, because the judge was the one who had issued the protection order, and the protection order in this case being the order that Samsung could not get access to the terms of this agreement.
I can see exactly how this is going to play out in court. And Samsung, when they're on the stand talking about this, will say, no, no, no. What we did was we started with a bowl of water.
Now, I don't get the reference.
Okay, so for the people that got the reference, you people are uber geeks, and I love every one of you. For the rest of you, that was Samsung's defense in designing their smartphones.
Ah, of course. Started with a bowl of water. I don't get it. And then there was this other business that happened. That was actually late last week, wasn't it, in Germany?
Yes, with Samsung using Apple's own patent against them.
Yeah,
the prior art thing.
Yeah, they used in Germany. the rules of prior art and filing dates are different than they are here in the States. And in order to defeat Apple's rubber band patent, the patent that Apple has on the concept of the bounce back when you get to the end of a list on a touchscreen device, in order to defeat that patent, Samsung used a video of Steve Jobs showing that feature in January of 2007 at Macworld as prior art to invalidate Apple's patent on the feature. So their method of defeating the patent was to prove that Apple invented it. And legitimately, under the law, that does count as prior art in Germany. My problem is that even trying to do so is just you know, proves absolute moral bankruptcy.
Yeah, and
it's disgusting. It's repellent.
And to sit there and say, well, look, Apple clearly can't have patented this because they invented it.
Yeah.
Which is basically what it comes down to. There's more to it than that.
And that's not their words. But right. That is what the argument comes down to. Drives me nuts. Drives me nuts. Just drives me nuts. And then to have people defend Samsung as the innovator and call Apple the copier. It's just like bizarro world.
But Brian, 8 before 10.
Yeah, good point. So shut up.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Oh, God. This makes me so tense, man. It just makes me tense.
And we need to find a way for you to be able to constructively release this anger, because Samsung is not going to change their ways. They have found a system that's working really well for them.
It's true.
And it's very profitable for them. Therefore, why should they change?
Also true. They could pay Apple $1 billion. They could, you know, that $1 billion that Apple won, you know, the $450 million of that, or I think it's $450 million of that, is being retried.
Mm-hmm. Yes, in November.
Just the amount, not the verdict.
Correct.
And that could be doubled, so it could go up to, you know, $1.4 billion that Samsung has got to pay, and it would just be a cost of doing business. And, you know, and that Samsung could lose another $1 billion in this on this other case that they have with Apple. Still just the cost of doing business, because they're making plenty of money by doing all this stuff.
Right. And they will continue to make plenty of money.
Yeah. You know, one of the Samsung. So the reason why the courts know that this information was given to Samsung is because a Samsung executive told Nokia, we know the terms of your deal with Apple. And apparently explained how they got it.
And then what kind of, what just
I don't even know, dude.
Oh, my
no idea. No idea. See, no idea.
Now I need therapy as well. Thanks, Brian.
See, it's just, you're welcome. Just arrogance and stupidity. He's a doctor. He's brilliant, supposedly. But one of his comments was, all information leaks. So, you know.
So it's okay.
So it's okay. Yeah. All information leaks.
I shake my fist at the hubris.
Mm-hmm. All right. Let's do a rapid fire. Let's do a rapid fire before I spring a leak.
All right. Did you know that Apple has apparently bought a company called Q?
I do know that, because I know that you wrote it up, because I didn't. Tell us about it, please.
Okay, so quickly, there's this company called Q, C-U-E, and they offer a service that's sort of Siri-ish, sort of Google Now-ish, but it's generally more social-based. So what you would do is ask Q something, or give it a piece of information, like a person's name. And then it will then go through and sift through all of your social networks, your emails, your documents, and then put together all the related information and present it to you in a clear and easy to follow way where it shows you the links between all of these things. So you can see the relationships between all the parts that make up whatever it is that, you needed information on. So this company, Apple, has apparently bought. Apple has not confirmed it, but everyone else is saying, yes, Apple bought the company. And this looks like a really great fit to go in with Siri to give Siri features that match or surpass what Google is doing with Google Now.
Well, now we say that.
The potential is there. Whether or not it gets implemented is another story, but the potential is there.
But I mean, one of the things that Google Now is really good at is knowing that you have a flight just because you have an itinerary.
Yes, and Google Now is great at the anticipatory information.
Yes, that's actually one of the most valuable things. Google Now is very good at learning that you go to work at this time every day and watching traffic and telling you that you may need to leave early because traffic is bad. Right, doing things like that, which doesn't sound like Q would even play in that space.
Probably not. Although now, as you say that, now I'm thinking Apple needs to buy our sponsor. They need to buy SaneBox.
Maybe, yeah. We'll get to that in a bit. I mean, and Apple is already doing some Google Now stuff with Notification Center.
Yes.
Some of it. Now, you know, not by no means all of it.
Correct. And okay, so here's the other thing about Q that I find really fascinating. There's probably more things, but this is the other thing that's coming to mind right now. And it's the way it builds relationships between information. And that coupled with what Siri does today, to me, feels like we get so much closer to Knowledge Navigator. And and that's exactly where I want Apple to take all this. I really want Knowledge Navigator. And we are just year by year, we're getting closer with our iPads to Knowledge Navigator.
And Knowledge Navigator was a concept shown by and championed by John Sculley after Steve Jobs left Apple. That eventually had some aspects of it had some kind of life as Newton, although Newton was not Knowledge Navigator.
Right. And at the time, the technology to really do Knowledge Navigator simply did not exist.
Right.
But from a hardware standpoint, we've got everything, or at least we're pretty close. And now it's a matter of getting the back end side to come up to speed with that whole idea.
So do you think that Google Now is
Google Now gets us in other aspects very close to Knowledge Navigator because it handles the anticipation part. So it's a proactive information service as opposed to reactive. And right now Siri is really a reactive service.
Yes.
And
Notification Center has some proactive stuff. Sort of.
Right, but not on the level that Google Now does.
No, definitely not. And I guess so to a certain extent you could argue that Apple wants Q's technology maybe to implement it differently. That's possible.
Okay, let's take a quick look at the other companies that Apple has bought in the last couple months.
Yeah, they bunch of mapping services.
Yeah, they bought a pedestrian mapping service.
Yep,
meaning foot routes. Traffic, not meh.
Right.
They bought a company that handles streaming data compression really well.
Yeah.
They bought a company that can search for any type of media, meaning like a TV show or movies, something like that you want to watch, and tell you every place that you can find it, whether it's local on your own network or hard drives, or if it's out on the internet.
Okay.
And that can include streaming content or content for sale. And
most of those so far are all services that could be implemented pretty much as is.
Yes. And there is another one that off the top of my head I don't remember. But the point is you've got all of these different services that Apple's picking up. And it's like they're modules that when you put them all together, we start getting this massive data service system that Siri becomes the front end for.
Right.
And Q, I think, becomes the piece that lets us glue all of that information together in meaningful ways.
Now you say Q, and I think to myself, oh, Riker, I liked you so much better before the beard.
I'm really glad you went there.
Yeah. All right, well, that's interesting.
And, you know, I just realized that Sierra and Ainsley, they never hit the timer button.
Yeah.
So we never went to another rapid fire topic.
That's true.
So hard to get quality interns.
It is. It is. So try now, Junior.
Oh, man.
Thank you. All right. Apple has something big. Of course, you know, for all we know, this is related to Q, but you did the story on the new hire.
Yes, they hired
the cable guy,
thank you, from Major League Baseball.
No, the cable guy.
Oh, right, the cable guy is not from Major League Baseball. The gentleman with what's his name? Mollet.
Jean-François.
That's right, Jean-François Mollet. I need to work on my French so it's as good as yours. All right, so this guy worked as a senior executive for Cable Labs.
Senior vice president.
Yes.
Of technology development.
Yes. And what Cable Labs does is come up with new technologies and new systems to better deliver content to people. And it was created basically as through a consortium of content providers, like cable companies. And so a lot of the technologies that are in play today, this guy in the cable industry, this guy had his hands in. And now he works for Apple on a big something.
And was it a blog post where he
announced it? Well, he didn't really announce it. It just he put it on his LinkedIn profile.
And he said he was working on quote unquote something big.
Yes.
For Apple.
Yes. And
which is exciting.
Yeah, so he started working for Apple in September. And then at the end of the month, or very beginning of October, he put this post on his LinkedIn page. And then Cable Labs confirmed, yeah, he works for Apple, not us.
Really, really? Oh, there's the bell.
Ah.
Interesting. As they say. I guess what the kids say these days.
Is that...
Yeah, they say, well, Si, that's interesting there, isn't it? I think that's what the kids say.
I need to get out more.
Well, gee, that'd be swell, right?
Golly willikers.
Yeah, that's what the kids say. That's so ridiculous. Oh, my goodness. Carl Icahn had lunch with Tim Cook. Do we care?
Only in that he's really trying to pressure Tim to bump up the stock buyback to $150 billion. And Carl has a very vested interest in Tim doing that, because that would most likely drive his – what does he have, like $1 billion in stock, in Apple stock? Something crazy,
yeah,
like that?
More than that.
Yeah, okay. So he has over $1 billion in Apple stock. And if the stock value goes up, then that
he'll
turns
have more
into
money.
Crazy, crazy profit.
Yeah, yeah. And, yeah. Which is, yeah, you know, Apple probably does need to increase its stock buyback. I mean, Apple is undervalued. Apple is dramatically undervalued. No one on Wall Street gets Apple. I've said this a million times. Say it again. No one understands Apple. No one understood Apple when the stock was going up. You know, many of the analysts pumping up Apple at that time didn't get Apple any better than they do now. Anyway, the point is this. Apple is undervalued. At some point, people will figure things out. if Apple is undervalued and Apple has a ton of cash and Apple is not does not have the need to buy major acquisitions, you know, to buy new revenue streams or to buy new market segments, then Apple should buy back its stock.
There you go. Carl Icahn,
he's got a point. He's got a point.
Oh, and there's a bell.
Yeah, thank goodness. Thank goodness. Now, let's talk about something sane.
That was an awesome segue.
You put Sanebox in a very, you put it very cleverly. What'd you call it?
Automated triage.
Automated triage for your email.
Yes.
Which yeah, is brilliant. And that's really cool. And these guys are sponsoring us, which I'm going to be honest, is even cooler.
Yes, it is. Yeah. Okay, so for those of you that don't know what triage is, it's a service that works with all your email accounts.
Sanebox, that is. Triage. You said triage.
A long day. Anyhow, so Sanebox, it's a service that goes through and triages all of your email and learns exactly how it is that you work with your email so that it presents to you the stuff you need to see when you need to see it and then filters and sorts everything else so that you can go and look at it in a much more manageable way.
In a digest. So it summarizes everything that it deems unimportant in a digest. That way you can make sure that you're not losing anything. And it learns from what you're doing, and it does it in a very quick way. Dave has been using this for a while now, and he was telling us how open an email once or you know throw an email away once, and it learns it.
You
know,
right.
And that's what it's doing. So it's looking for the things that you deem important, and it turns out that one of the things it's looking for is the emails you actually read, huh?
Yeah, which is great. And it works with any email client, and you don't have to install any extra software to make it do its thing.
Yeah. Yeah, which is really, really cool. And it's analyzing your past behavior, you know, which emails you open, which ones you actually respond to, how quickly, how often. It makes a lot of sense now that they've explained it to me.
Yes. And, one thing that I love, it will snooze emails that you deem as non-urgent, so they will just simply disappear until whatever your snooze period is, and then they'll pop back up. So it's a great way to get stuff that you need to deal with later set to where you'll actually deal with it later.
Yeah, instead of just, you know, I'll do it later and then forgetting about it.
Right.
Which is what I call Tuesday. you can also have all your attachments move to Dropbox. That's super, super handy to me, or at least it could be.
Oh, yeah. Well, especially if you're doing most of your email work, say, from an iPhone.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Exactly. So these guys are doing something that's really, really cool. We think you should check them out. They do pricing. They offer pricing on a monthly basis. But if you pay for 2 years in advance, you get a significant saving, like I don't know.
And by significant meaning
like 60
insanely discounted. Yeah. Like 60%.
It starts at something like $6 a month, and if you buy 2 years at a time, or if you buy 2 years in advance, yeah, it's $2.04 a month.
Right.
That's a significant savings. And if you sign up through us, they'll give you a $10 credit.
That wow.
So whatever level of service you're buying, you can apply $10 to it.
That's very cool. And you can try it out for free for 2 weeks, and you don't need to give them credit card information to do that.
Yeah, you can start this off without giving. I like that. We have two sponsors right now. Both of these companies let you try out their service without giving them a credit card. I love that.
Well, it's because we get cool sponsors.
Yeah.
We really do.
We're good that way. And
so where do we need to send people if they want to take advantage of the $10 credit.
So we have a link in the show notes. It's also, it's, we'll tell you now, it's SaneBox. That's S-A-N-E-B-O-X, SaneBox.com/ACM.
Go try it out. You'll be glad you did.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. It's good to have them on board. All right, so now let's talk about all that money at Plaz.
They have a lot of money. And this is an article you wrote. So Apple has 10% of the non-financed corporate cash for all of the United States.
And I'm financial.
What did I say?
Financed.
Triage.
Yeah. So in other words, you look at corporate America, exclude all the, you know, banking and finance related companies, and look at their total cash. According to Moody's, Moody's released a report this week that said that non-financial U.S. companies have $1.48 trillion in cash holdings. And Apple has 10% of that.
That's huge.
Stunning. Apple has 10% of all the corporate money in America. And it's interesting because I believe very strongly, actually, that if too much of a percentage of the resources of a society accumulate at the very top, that society will eventually implode, crumble, explode, whatever. It's always happened, and it's probably going to always happen. And it's happening in the U.S. I don't want to go too political here, but it is happening in the U.S. In the last 13 years, we've had an enormous accumulation of wealth at the top. You know, top 1%, you know, if you remember the last election, there was all the business about the 1% and the 2% and the 97% and the 47%, whatever.
Right.
Money is, you know, tax policy aside, money is accumulating at the top. The top 1%, the top 5%, the top 10% have more and more and more of this country's wealth. And which means that the rest of the people don't. And that's apparently happening in corporate America too, because we have one company that has 10% of all the money. Well, except for, I know the financial related companies have a ton of money. Let's not lose sight of that.
Right. So we're talking about a subset of corporations.
Yeah. But it's a subset that Moody's has been looking at for a long time. Moody's did not put this report out because Apple had 10% of it. Moody's has been making this report for a long time. It's just this time around, Apple has got 10% of all that money. And the top five companies have 25% of all the... Wait, am I getting this right? Is it 25? Now I'm going to have to look at the article. The top five companies have...
Triage.
I'm getting to it. And the top 50, I want to say the top 50 companies have 62% of all the money.
So half of the companies have more than half of the money.
No, it's more like 1% of all the companies have more than half of all the money. The top 50 companies, I mean, there's...
Oh, I'm sorry.
There's tens of thousands of corporations. And
somewhere in my head, I put a percent after 50.
So, yeah, the top five have 25%. Yeah, okay, so there we go. Number 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. That's Apple, Microsoft, Google, Cisco, and Pfizer, the only non-tech company. Yeah, Pfizer, the pharmaceutical guys.
Yeah.
They own 25% of all of the money, and the top 50 companies have 62% of all the money. And I bet you the top 100, 150 probably have most of the rest. It's an interesting... It's an interesting thing, and I think that it's fascinating that, you know, we're not talking about energy companies. You know, we're not talking about the car companies. We're not talking about defense contractors. We're talking about tech companies, Apple, Microsoft, Google, and Cisco, top four companies. And it's interesting to me.
What I find interesting is that the types of companies that are holding the greatest amount of wealth now, mm-hmm. are not the types of companies that were holding this wealth several years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So we've seen a big change. I mean, there's a time when you'd look at pharmaceutical companies as the big name.
And energy companies.
Yeah, and now we're looking at technology companies.
Yeah, and number two, Microsoft has $77 billion in cash, which is, it's a lot of money. It's a lot more money than Apple had when analysts started freaking out about how much money Apple had 3 or 4 years ago.
Yeah, and they're still raking it in hand over fist.
Yeah, and they're giving it back hand over fist, and they're still raking it in hand over fist.
Yeah, they can't give it back as fast as they bring it in.
No, they can't. It's just true. Well, nor should they, but no, they can't. And the funny thing is, of course, is that Apple has accumulated all this cash while everybody is talking about how Apple does everything wrong. You know, Apple needs to have a cheap phone. Apple needs
if Apple's doing everything wrong, how come their stores are always packed with people and those people are walking out with purchases?
How come they make so much money?
Yeah. How come people line up for a phone that analysts ahead of time are saying, oh, it's not even a big upgrade?
Yeah. Yeah. Before they've even seen it. Yeah, it's I don't know. It's a good question. It's a good question. And I am also – so like I said, I do think about and am worried about the accumulation of wealth at the very top. And what's interesting to me is – I mean this – I'm – all right. So you look at other companies. If other companies had this much money, what they would be doing with it is what the analysts want Apple to do with it. They'd be buying competitors. They'd be buying revenue streams. They'd be buying television companies. You know, they'd be buying broadcasters. They'd be buying music labels, movie studios. They'd be buying Intel. They'd be buying Foxconn. You know, any other company would be taking this money. And trying to buy more, M-O-A-R, more.
Yeah, capital more.
Yeah, capital more. And that's actually one reason why it's a problem for wealth to accumulate at the top is because it just leads to more accumulation. But that's not what Apple's doing. Apple's business model is not to buy revenue streams. It's not to buy competitors. It's not to buy market share. Apple does not do that. Apple has never done that. Apple does not do that, and Apple is not going to do that for the foreseeable future.
No. What Apple does when they're buying companies, they're buying companies that they have a use for.
Yeah, they buy technologies and people.
Yes.
By people, I mean, you know, the people that work or own the company. They buy the company in order to hire the people, really.
Right. They're not literally buying humans.
Not literally. But they could. With that much money, they could. You know, yeah. Apple could start a little seed fund. $2-3 billion would launch a heck of a human trafficking industry.
And you were worried about what people were going to think about your Butcher Baker candlestick title. Maker thing. Just saying.
You're just saying. So, yeah, it's interesting. You know, I don't. So, I feel like I should be really tense about Apple having 10% of all the money.
Well,
And I'm not. And I don't know if it's because I'm blind or if because my analysis is correct.
Well, I'm hoping your analysis is correct, and we do have the whole part about Apple has a history of the way they spend money, meaning they buy stuff that has a purpose for them as opposed to buying simply just to generate more wealth.
Yeah, revenue and market share.
Right. So it feels like Apple having this disproportionate amount of wealth is more palatable than other companies simply because they're less likely to use that wealth in ways that ultimately would be detrimental to the overall economy.
Yeah, what's interesting is like I'm not worried about Microsoft having $77 billion because Microsoft is so inept. Doesn't really bother me. You know, Microsoft did a lot of very dangerous and damaging buying in the 90s. You know, Microsoft would buy competing companies to protect various assets that Microsoft had. And Microsoft would do things like one of the things they did was Borland, which is a now defunct company that was making developer tools, the state-of-the-art, top-of-the-line developer tools, is they started hiring Borland's top executives away with bonuses of millions at a time when that was unheard of.
Right. And really, those executives, because of the amount of money they were being given, would have been foolish to pass it up because
– Yeah, it's – yeah.
For, yeah, they wouldn't get that otherwise.
I know that one of the last guys they hired that way, they let the guy come to work. He didn't have to report to work for a year as long as he left Borland, because they were doing everything they could to use all the money they had to put the competition out of business.
So here's $7 million. Take a year off. That's basically what they were doing. I don't know what the actual amount was that he was
given. I can't remember what it is either, to be honest. But it was a lot of money at the time. And but anyway, today Microsoft just seems so inept at just about anything and everything they do that doesn't bother me that they've got so much money. Doesn't bother me that Google has all this money.
Which is kind of interesting.
I don't know. And Pfizer, I don't know if I care about Pfizer having a bunch of money either.
I think we should. But that's only because there's the pharmaceutical industry is such a crazy place.
I'd be really worried if a company like Monsanto had $100 billion.
I would be very concerned about that as well.
Yeah. Sorry, Monsanto. Don't trust you guys. Don't like what you do.
Yeah. Well, wait till you see what happens to the corn you buy.
Yeah, fair enough. And another interesting thing is that companies with this much money often devote – companies with a lot of money often devote enormous resources into bending the political process to suit their needs and desires. And Apple is effectively infamous for not having a big lobbying process in Washington.
So here's a reason to potentially be concerned that Pfizer has all that money. They may be putting a lot into lobbying.
They probably are. Most of the pharmaceutical companies certainly are lobby very – actually, most large corporations in America lobby prodigiously. The technology industry, especially the technology industry based in Silicon Valley, has long had a history of not lobbying very well or very hard, for good or for ill. And but if Apple were to start and listen, I share a lot of what I understand of Tim Cook's politics resonates with me. And even with that in mind, I would be concerned if Apple started playing hardball in politics.
That would be very interesting.
Which they can legally do thanks to Citizens versus United. Wait, Citizens United versus whatever. It's a court case called Citizens United.
The one big court case.
Yeah.
The big one.
Yeah, so I don't know. It's really interesting. I don't think that it's good for the economy in the long term for all this money to be accumulating at the top, even with Apple. You know, money does the economy the most good when it's put to use. And when companies like Apple and Google and Microsoft, you know, and remember all these companies, a lot of this money we're talking about is actually held offshore because of all the tax policies that have been the subject of some news coverage in the last year.
True.
So, you know,
some of it's offshore because it was generated offshore.
Yes. And then some companies actively move money offshore. Apple does not, but some companies do. But I mean, so, you know, if all of this money, this $1.48 trillion, if even half of it, if even 10% of it was put to work, it would have been
a lot of money.
Yeah, it is. So, I don't know. It's an interesting thing.
Yeah.
Interesting thing. All right. I want to thank Sanebox for sponsoring us.
Yeah, that's very cool. Thank you, Sanebox.
And with that, we should get out of here.
I think so. All right, everyone, that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. And if you haven't had a chance to go to iTunes yet and review our show, please do that, because
yeah,
we love it when you go and tell us how much you love our show. You know, no pressure.
Yes.
Yeah. Thanks for listening. Feel free to follow me on Twitter and app.net. I'm Jay Gamut, both places.
I am TM O'Brien. It's Brian with a Y on Twitter. App.net, I'm Brian Chaffin, still, coincidentally, with a Y. Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. My personal blog is at geektells.com. Jeff's blog is at freshbrewedtales.com. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. Thank you, Cashfly. The bass is by Boom. Recorded just for us, and that's all for this week.
And as always, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.